Welcome to the S2 Cognition Podcast. S2 is the official cognitive evaluation in sports, from youth to pro, where athletes and coaches build to win.
Welcome to the S2 Cognition Podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Hunter, and today 14-year NFL veteran and Super Bowl champion Drew Stanton delves into the concept of impulse control, specifically in the context of quarterbacks in the NFL. The discussion highlights how impulse control affects decision-making on the field, pre-snap reads, and then the pressures that influence a quarterback's decision-making. The conversation emphasizes the complexity of the quarterback position and the need for tailored coaching strategies to enhance decision-making skills. Drew also touches on the intricacies of impulse control in quarterbacks, emphasizing the importance of game-like practice scenarios and the need for error correction in those practice settings. We end the discussion talking through how coaches can create environments that challenge players to help make decisions under pressure, ultimately leading to better performance on the field. For those that are new here, welcome. We're excited to have you today, and those that are returning listeners, we always appreciate your support. To help us continue our growth, we ask that you subscribe, rate, and review the show. Thanks again to Drew for joining us. We hope you enjoy. Drew, thanks for joining us. 14-year NFL vet and Super Bowl winning quarterback. Appreciate your time. Today, we're going to really dive into impulse control and what that looks like from the quarterback position. But before we dive into how it reveals itself and going down that thread, Brandon, I want to specifically talk to you and ask you this question. What does the cognitive literature talk about? How do you define impulse control? What are we measuring? How have you measured it in your lab, you know, for decades? What are we looking at?
Yeah, I mean, impulse control, we're familiar with it in our everyday lives. We're constantly faced with the impulse to respond or to react. When we're talking about everyday life situations, I generally use the example of sitting at a traffic light and in the lane next to you is the turn lane. And when that green arrow goes specifically for the turn lane, sometimes you impulsively hit the gas and then you have to hit the brake. That's the impulse control system. That impulse control system governs our behavior on the sports field too. So we always have the impulse to jump when somebody does a head fake or a pump fake in basketball. Breaking pitches are specifically used to generate the impulse to swing because it looks like a strike and then it fades out of the strike zone. You know, in football, every position is wired to just respond quickly. So it's 2024 and we're still running reverses and misdirection plays because it literally capitalizes on the brain's wiring to respond in the direction of motion. At the quarterback position specifically, you can think of a bunch of different instances when a route may look great right off of the snap, but you didn't take a split second to read the linebacker, you know, cheating over or something like that, impulsively throwing into traffic because you feel the pressure. Something in the sports realm that I think we need to take into consideration specifically is, you know, our motor system is wired to respond. And when pressure is infused into game scenarios, that threshold revs up. So you see a lot more swinging at out of the zone pitches on 0-2 counts than you do in 3-0 counts. You see a lot of interceptions in football when the pressure's on. You need a big play. It's fourth quarter, you're down. You're kind of forcing it, right? Or you're kind of like throwing without really fully engaging in the complete read. So, you know, the way our motor system is wired to respond and that threshold. And some players are more impulsive than others. You see running backs as an example. You talk about these running backs that have a more patient style, where other running backs have zero gait. I mean, they are just straight, you know, they're going for the hold no matter what. And quarterback play is no different, right, Drew? I'm sure you're familiar with this sort of impulse to want to throw or to make a bad decision because you just didn't give it a split second longer.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think you look at it and impulse control is something that exists around us in our daily life, as you talk about, but it was a phrase I had never heard of until I started talking with you guys after I took the test and we start to understand what that is. And I think you can break it down all the way throughout from when you call a play call in the huddle, what you think is going to happen through your preparation, understanding, diagramming, all of these things. You break the huddle, you get up to the line of scrimmage, and then you go through a pre-snap analysis, right? Then you have some impulse control there of saying, From a quarterback standpoint, I was always taught to read the defensive line first, and then you go second level to the linebackers, and you finish with the DBs because they're going to kind of tell you the last key components of what's going on. And you talked about linebacker displacement. Sometimes when you go through that, you'll be able to say, okay, well, I know these linebackers are plus over is a football term that we use, right? So that's going to lend the safety to potentially drop down. Or if the safety's starting to creep down where the linebackers are, you're expecting pressure then. So that's where impulse control starts to kind of start rearing its head of saying, okay, well, I think this is what's going to go on here. Do I want to then switch the offensive line, change protection, slide it here, pick it up? But then I also have to change the route potentially to match it up. And this is all before the ball's even snapped, right? So you have these keys and these triggers. As soon as you get the ball in your hands, you then have to A, reaffirm what you saw by changing protection, seeing the whole picture of what's going on, apply it. Am I in the right play? And then now you're getting to your coverage key, the corner that you're talking about. And a guy's going to run a stop route. Is he going to win his one-on-one matchup? Is it zone? And where are you trying to find the soft spot in that zone? Again, quarterback 101, as you learn football, you realize each coverage has its stress points, if you will, right? And you also have areas you want to attack. So in a perfect world, you're attacking those zones. The impulse control to say, I'm going to go after it. And I know that my matchup one-on-one on this side is better, but it's still a man-to-man matchup. My footwork has to match the drop. As I get to the top of my drop, where is that DB? Where is the safety in relation to that if I'm going to try to fit it into that window? Where's the horizontal displacement? All of these things that are now pouring into the ability to say, do I want to make this throw? And then the very last component of it is the physical component of letting it release and trusting that you have done all of the steps along the way to be able to put you in a position to say, okay, now I'm trying to just throw the ball where I need to.
Drew, that was legitimately like a 4-minute answer, 3-minute answer on one decision of whether I throw the football or not. It's like, that's a crazy amount of information. I think it just is a healthy reminder for us that didn't play the position, just how hard this really is. I want to pull on a thread there. You talked about, and I think it was Greg Olson, a good buddy of you. I think this was one of his observations of just innately, I think he's picking this up, that when the quarterback is under center and it's run action, it is a more successful play than when a player in shotgun or quarterback in shotgun is running run action. Because, and I think this is Brandon, you can allude to this. I think we talked to Luke McCown a little bit about this, but the keys and all of those responsibilities you're talking about, all of it looks more like a run under center, and it's harder for these linebackers to decode run or pass and read those keys as opposed to the quick. I mean, it happens faster when it's in shotgun, right? The ball gets there faster. They pull it faster. Give us some insight from a quarterback position on why you also think, if you're in line with what Greg, astutely reviewed and what we would agree with, what are your thoughts on that?
I think from a linebacker's perspective and a defensive perspective, for sure, because under center, you're seeing all of these things that translate. But I think from a quarterback's perspective, because of the way the game has now trickled down into the lower levels, so many kids are comfortable being in the shotgun, right? You watch some of these guys, they don't want to turn their back to the defense because you've got to take that memory and then reapply it. And there's some impulse control there. Okay, I saw this linebacker. I turn my back to the defense. I go make a play fake. Now I've got to locate a guy. And all of a sudden that linebacker that was supposed to be in his hook curl zone because he knows the route concept like Luke Kuechly would, and he's dropping to a spot where he's 30 yards deep and picking the ball off and you look like an idiot. So there's that. Yes, I think from a defensive perspective, but we have so many things at our disposal now from film study and analysis and analytics and all this stuff. But what do you do in the moment to be able to protect against that? And I'm watching these guys now in college, so much of their run game is simplistic and it is it's simply there to set up the pass game. And so they're comfortable operating more out of the shotgun because you don't have to drop your eyes. You don't have to turn your back to the defense. You're literally sitting there assessing what's going on. That's why RPOs have become so important. You're reading one guy within the pieces of the puzzle. And if he goes, you pull the ball and you throw it. And much like the shotgun snaps now, old school traditional football, yes, you're going to get the best run action simulation when you're under center. That was the NFL that I came into early on, and that's where I kind of left. And this new age of football, if you will, of diagnosing things and doing things, Yeah, that's why you don't see as good a run action or the displacement or the reverses as Brandon talked about earlier, because guys have so much now that they're sitting there and keying on, or they're understanding what's going on. And football is recycled, regurgitated so many different ways. You know, you have these coaches that are very comfortable with just repeating the same process and over again. And then you have the people that think outside the box, the McVays of the world, the Shanahans, where they're setting stuff up just to be able to run it a week later or build on it. Or Mike McDaniels, another guy, they're trying to set up a run game. And then all of a sudden, when you are run, boom, that's when play action comes out and you see these huge chunk plays of George Kittle running wide open on the field because they lost their coverage key. They lost their eye control and eye discipline of what's going on. And that's where you're seeing it. So I think in a very politically correct answer, Greg is right. But there's also some margin for interpretation.
Yeah, but to your point, I love this thought. And let me make sure I'm understanding this clearly, because you're basically saying what started out as the whole goal was to be more advantageous for the quarterback. We made it easier. The reads are, you don't have to move your eyes. You don't have to relocate. It's all supposed to help and make the position easier, is actually working at a disadvantage. Is that what you're saying?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, because again, when you're looking at this, you're taking your eyes off the coverage. The really good quarterbacks, the comfortable quarterbacks in this league, right? You have a coverage key progression, or you have a read progression where you're just going 1, 2, 3 and you're reading it across the board, as we talk about, right? So when you're doing play action, you're not reading coverage at that point. You're going to go, I'm going left to right across the board. And so it does dumb it down in that sense. But then you also have to see all the 21 other moving pieces around you and how quickly to go through that read, how fast do you do that? And then again, being in a position where you understand what's going on, you might lose a back in protection. So there's one guy you can't check the ball down to. There's another guy, okay, I've got to get backside because the safety's rolling over and cheating over the top. So, you know, defenses are aware of this, and especially in rundowns and blitzes and all these other things you have to be aware of. They're trying to disguise coverage to make you throw into windows you shouldn't be trying to attempt to.
What's really interesting, and I had never thought about, and adds a new wrinkle, is all of the pre-snap reads, how that can inform our impulsivity and how we may become more impulsive based on expectation from a pre-snap read rather than just being impulsive post-snap, which is the way, from a scientific perspective, it's really isolated in that, hey, this was an impulsive decision, or this particular, you know, coverage or whatever led to this impulsive decision. But in fact, there's a lot, even pre-snap, that might lead you to be a little bit more impulsive. Man, I'm wondering how we can tailor some of that to specific athletes, especially if you know that they're inherently impulsive, how that might inform their pre-snap reads, or inform the way that we sort of coach those particular athletes.
Yeah, I think part of it is just inexperience, really, right? You get to the NFL and you're asked to run a certain style of offense in college. That is 10x at your disposal when you get to the NFL. And so you get out there and you see some of these rookies struggle, or you see some have, you know, some bumps in the road early on. And then you're sitting there and you're saying, why does this guy figure it out? Why was Josh Allen able to put it all together? Versus now you're seeing Sam Darnold exponentially longer getting an opportunity, but now having success, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then there's a guy like Josh Rosen who just, unfortunately, his brain was probably extremely intelligent, not able to put it all together come Sundays. And I think part of it, as you talked about earlier, is that pressure, right? It's the pressure of not only what you're putting on yourself, but then the pressure of guys actually running at you, trying to hit you. I mean, I've seen guys that are phenomenal in practice, in a controlled setting, being able to do all of these things. But when there's so many variables that go into that, right, on the actual, you talk about these guys as just being gamers, right? Like they just show up on Sundays and they perform at a high level. Well, part of that, yes, is because of how they're wired and all of these things. But part is the recall of going through the process and playing the game before they've ever done it. Like I said, you know, with some of these guys, because they've already made those impulsive mistakes before. And that's what I would be curious to know is pre-snap, how much can you control when you get to that? Because I, you know, comes to mind some of my interceptions that I threw coming off of play action, right? I thought the linebacker was supposed to be in one place and all of a sudden he wasn't. And I was like, well, wait a minute, like in my drawing on the board or in film study, he was here. I didn't even see him, right? So then there becomes the anticipation component of, well, he's got to get here and I've got to put the ball there. I can't wait for him to be open in the NFL. That was the biggest thing that I learned, is if you wait for somewhere to be open, that window's already closed by the time you release it.
There's a couple of things to unpack there. First is something of the reality of measuring cognition and one's capacity to control impulses. And, you know, we jokingly say this a lot with something like impulse control. You know, Scott, the other co-founder of S2, this is his wheelhouse. He could put you through a 4-hour battery of tests to really exquisitely characterize your impulse control. For a police officer, you know, if somebody pulls a cell phone out of their waistband and you feel like your life is threatened, it doesn't matter how much you can control your impulsivity. In that moment, you can't understand how somebody is going to react. It's not a life or death situation, but even though you have great impulse control, when you have a 300-pound lineman steaming at you full speed, it's hard to quantify that game speed, all of those things you just alluded to, and how you might react in that moment. Even though we kind of have a great understanding of how you're probably going to respond, there is no substitute for that type of pressure.
Well, that's why you need tracking capacity capability too.
Well, now you're moving the needle on me, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Now he's like, wait, now you got to anticipate throws. It's like, well, yeah, that's where the other systems come into play. Hey, that guy's not supposed to be there. Okay. Ed Reed. All right. So that leads me to a great question, Drew, broadly, but take this wherever you want to. Do you feel the most impulsive situations where a quarterback makes those decisions?
I think, like I said, it happens individually based on what the demands are of the game, right? Like, we talk about that when I was playing, of you can't win the game in the first half. So it's okay to throw the ball away. It's okay, you know, to take a sack early on or to punt or do any of that in the first half, because you don't want to throw the ball in harm's way. You don't want to throw a pick six. You don't want to try to squeeze it in here. You don't want to try to do too much. Now, there is a time to cut it loose and to be able to do that. But as Brandon was talking about too, you've got to weigh those options. If a guy's barreling down at you, okay, so some guys have a tendency to drop their eyes and see the rush, especially the more you get hit, the more you kind of have a tendency to do that, right? Like, your ability, it's just human nature of like, I don't want to sit here and be a battering ram, but I've got to try to deliver a football over to here, this guy on a one-on-one matchup. And I think each quarterback, based off of so many factors, but I would say the biggest thing is, how are they pre-wired, right? What are they doing to set that up? Because there is so many demands when you get to the highest level of the NFL of what's on your plate, versus in high school, you might be the best athlete, evade rushers. You might not even have a very good offensive line, but you can look like a superstar. You get to the college level, and so much of that too, the defenses are so far superior, in my opinion, that the college game, in a sense, has turned into backyard football, right? Like, you can do a lot of these things. You don't see a lot of rhythm throws typically in college, right? You're seeing guys at the highest level, I've got to get a mobile quarterback, I've got to be able to extend plays, I've got to be able to do this and keep plays alive. Those guys that try to do that in the NFL, they find out very quickly, unless you're Lamar Jackson, you're not getting away with that consistently week in and week out. And so I think that's where guys have to understand. And my greatest ability or thought process for a quarterback in the NFL is, can he have a timing passing game? Because to me, that's putting all the components you talk about at S2 to work and not putting the ball in harm's way. You're taking a drop and the ball is coming out on time, where it needs to be, when it's supposed to be there, and how it's supposed to be there. So if you're doing those things, that's playing quarterback at a high level. That's why you see guys like Aaron Rodgers that can do it for so long. You see guys like Tom Brady that can play for as long as he did. Peyton Manning, the same thing. He has the answers to the test so much before the test is even given to him, because he set it up that way. He's doing this, manipulating things, and then there is impulse control. Oh, wait, he's not in the place, right? Like, you hear so many stories about being around Peyton and Tom and all the greatest quarterbacks to have ever played this game before. Part of it is, yes, preparation. Part of it is the longevity of doing what they're doing. But the other portion of it is, as Kirk Cousins talked about, understanding how you actually use all of your strengths to your strengths. Because that's really hard, and the highest level of competition for a quarterback to now understand, well, this is, I'm really not that great at this, but here's my superpowers. This is what makes me elite. And when you can marry that with coaching and personnel and all these other things, that's where you're going to find that golden ticket. I mean, I remember being down in Tampa Bay and going through the Super Bowl and the run and all this stuff. And it's invaluable to be around Tom and just hear the conversations he would talk about, right? Like how he was wired. But that's when they made some trades and quarterbacks were starting to move. And he said, if an NFL franchise isn't doing everything in their power to make the quarterback as good as he can possibly be, they're doing a disservice to the entire franchise, because you constantly have to press the envelope. And that's what he said about Bill. Bill made him better because he was uncomfortable. He had to be, you know, learning and growing and expanding constantly, because as soon as you're comfortable, right, in a setting, some other variable is going to pop up. And then where is your impulse control there? Where is your decision making then? What is that? What's going on? And can you stay active within that moment based on what the play structure and design is called for?
Yeah, you sound like a Shanahan disciple when you're going to go rhythm and timing on me and anticipating. I'm like, that's like, well, those guys 2.0.
Yeah,
that's their bread and butter.
Their systems are built on the ball coming out. I was in a system that was built on redirecting and, you know, hops and sights and getting the ball out. I was also with Mike Martz early on, where it was like the greatest show on turf. So I was fortunate to be around a lot of different systems that had the ability to stress the quarterback in certain ways. And some, there was a lot more on your plate in the run game. Other times it was just, hey, go out here, get us in the best look. It's a number count, right? We're going to really cut the defense in half, and that's your run game. And we want to get numbers and do that. I've been other places where you have the fullback that adds to it. And then that just, everything broadens from there as far as the play action, drop back, everything.
Okay, so we've defined impulse control. We've given examples of what it looks like, but I want to move. I mean, we're going to try to help develop players to be better decision makers on the field. So at quarterback and impulse control, if I'm a coach listening to this, Brandon, help give the context for what the science and the cognitive literature tells us about moving the needle in impulse control.
Yeah. So obviously any drills we set up, and this is probably old hat to a lot of development coaches, but has to really work ultimately to game like scenarios, game speed, game scenarios that's going to elicit those impulsive behaviors. And you can mimic those in practice. One of the things that I've really loved working with some quarterback coaches is about really play speed. Or play style. I think that we have, you know, tended to gravitate towards sports are fast, so you have to be fast. And so when that's always the case, young athletes in particular never learn sort of that play speed, that optimal play speed. And I think it's important for them to not fear making mistakes. And I know that, you know, now we're getting to where, you know, second string college quarterbacks can't afford to make a mistake in practice and those kinds of things. But if you tell a quarterback, hey, for this particular series in practice, I want you to go as fast as possible. I want you to go through your reads, progressions, decision-making as fast as possible so that you can see and feel what kind of mistakes you make. And then on this particular series, I want you to be as patient and as accurate as possible and see what types of mistakes you make. Obviously, the faster you go, the more impulsive you're going to be, the more interceptions and those kinds of mistakes you're going to make. And the slower you play, the more you're going to miss reads, the more sacks you're going to take. But ultimately, you're going to find that sweet spot to where you're not making that mistakes, or you're actually learning how fast you can play before you fall into that sort of chronic mistake error, that kind of impulsivity. So actually learning how to play patient and learning how to play speed and finding where the boundaries of each of those are. Because as Drew talked about, certain situations and certain concepts are going to require you to toggle back and forth. Coaches are obviously going to tell you, hey, on this one, I need you to get it out as quickly as possible. But on this one, I need you to sort of let things develop this particular play and those kinds of things. So I think that's important when setting up sort of drill work or development work, especially with young athletes. But as you get older, I think, you know, defenses nowadays are doing very specific things to elicit impulsive behavior or bad throws. So being able to sort of set up those kinds of stages and violate expectations in practice. So, you know, hey, here's what we're running. And then all of a sudden the defense does something different and you've got to quickly sort of find an alternative without just engaging in impulsive behavior can also be really helpful.
Yeah. So if I understand it, you're saying they need to practice in the environments at which they're going to perform. And it's something that actually Drew talked about, right? So I know this is going to air later, but we watched the Bengals Ravens last night and Joe made that throw in the end zone that we thought was an interception. And he was like, you heard Kirk. He's like, well, that guy's not supposed to be there. Or Joe read it wrong and he thought it was this. Well, Drew, I'm thinking of you and you're talking about that guy's not supposed to be there, but I threw it anyways, because that's what, so violating the expectancy of what the quarterback, violating his expectations by doing that in practice, you're also throwing those wrinkles in those systems to work on impulse control. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that tends to lead to a lot of impulsive mistakes is you, as Drew talked about earlier, and I'm sort of conceptualizing that pre-snap, you're expecting a player to do X, and that's the way you've practiced it. You practice it and practice it. And then when that player does Y, all of a sudden, you know, you're just quick to react. You make some snap judgment that leads to impulsive mistakes. So the more that we can force quarterbacks to engage in that in practice and really violate those, you know, expectancies, because in practice we tend to fall into these rhythms of doing certain things over and over again and working them to perfection, if you will. But that's never the game. And so the more we can force athletes to sort of be a little bit more patient or face those violations of expectancy, I think the better equipped they'll be to deal with that in the game.
Drew, how often, two-part question, how often did you A, see those scenarios, especially in practice, where that would happen, or B, and separate these into two pieces, but B would be, how would you as a former quarterback and a coach try to understand this from a quarterback perspective? How would you implement some of these drills to help an athlete in practice develop?
Yeah, well, I think it goes hand in hand as far as Brandon, what he was talking about. The phrase I really hone in on is error correction, right? You want to make mistakes. That's what practice is for. But then there's the caveat of coaches don't want to see mistakes, right? They want to feel comfortable. They want to feel warm and fuzzy inside and be like, well, he's going to hit this home run. And I mean, I remember being on scout team because I was a backup and they're like, well, no, the ball's going to go here. And I go, well, that's not where Matt Ryan's going to throw the football in cover two on a curl. Like, he's not going to, he's not an idiot. And they're like, well, no, just throw it there. And I go, I'm not going to throw it there. Like, my coach is going to tell me not to practice bad habits. Now, do you want me to fit it into a window or something here? Yeah, I'll do that. But I'm not going to sit here knowing him that offense or that an adjustment versus cover two, that it turns into a corner route or a bench route versus a curl. That's not happening. So like, they always want the answers test. Or you take an offensive coach and you sit there and you say, okay, well, I want to be able to, you know, run a play action post over the top because this quarter safety is going to come down and read run first and then he's going to be wide open. Well, yeah, that's great. What happens if they don't play quarters though? That's not his run responsive anymore. So I think that was the beauty of playing for Bruce Arians, is we had premium plays that we really liked and we wanted to get up. We would see them versus multiple coverages. So we would practice against multiple coverages. So the ball is going to different locations. You're doing all of these things, but you don't always have that luxury. Again, as Brandon's talking about, if you're a backup quarterback, you're not sitting there trying to press the envelope because they might all of a sudden say, well, you know, we're taking your NIL money or you need to get out of here. We don't want, you know, like all of that stuff is now an added pressure on them. Now, if you could find a coach that is literally saying, I want to see you make mistakes. I want to see you make mistakes full speed because that's how you're going to correct it. And that was one thing I was fortunate when Doug Nussmeier was my quarterback coach at Michigan State. He's like, you got to trust your eyes. You got to tell me what you saw. Why did you make the throw? I don't care if it's a good throw, bad throw. What did you see? Because then we can make corrections all based off of that, not sitting here saying, well, I don't know. You say, I don't know to him. And he's like, well, I don't know if you should play then. Right. It's like, so like, that's the thing. If you had a reason behind what you're seeing in a controlled environment, and then you get out of there and you're trying to understand what that looks like, then it is different. But I think for me, right, your eyes are such the biggest sensory input to your brain of what you need to do, but then it needs to match up with the physical of your feet to be able to actually go out and apply it. And I think anytime you can do drills where there is distraction and they're putting more stress on you, but your eyes are taking off of your primary target, how fast can you relocate that target and then deliver the football as soon as you go from separation? Because that's what DBs are looking for. As soon as you separate, a DB is going to then break on the football. When you're going through that process, how fast can you go from pulling that back to then the release point? Because as soon as you release the football, your job is done as a quarterback. Everything that you have done at that point is now out of your control. And I think for quarterback coaches, sometimes they get enamored with all these cool drills and the marketing of it and all the different things that go into making it. The really good quarterback coaches understand biomechanics. They understand the different stressors of how can I put you in a position, as Brandon talked about, to make a throw you're going to be asked to make in a setting that is going to be conducive for game-like replication. And then not only that, have the impulse control. I get to separation. Uh-oh, he's not open. Can I pull it back down and stay in rhythm and get back into that? So there's a lot of different things that that I have that I probably can't explain over or without showing or doing all these things that we'll leave for a different day.
Get a
But that is
whiteboard,
definitely, yeah, that is something that you can train, that you can go over based off of the stressors that you're asked to do within the setting of a game.
Yeah, not to mention the leash of these guys have just gotten so much shorter. I mean, it is so short. I feel like the era of your quarterback and what you got to be, you, Colt, those other guys, Dan, like, man, that I don't know if that exists anymore.
Yeah, it's a quick trigger is really what it is. So then what that does is it makes you play tentative. It makes you play reluctant to make mistakes when it is time to go out and press the envelope. Now, there's nothing wrong with being patient, as Brandon talked about, finding your check down, being able to do all these different things. But then you look at some of these guys that were so highly touted and then they're rated a bust right away. Why is that? Each individual case has its own set of circumstances. But a lot of it has to do with the ability to go out and be the best version of themselves because they're so guarded and saying, well, I just don't want to mess this up, as opposed to saying, what are the superpowers that I talked about earlier? And understanding how does your brain work differently so that we can maximize that? Because again, a Lamar Jackson offense is going to be very different than a Tom Brady style offense. And there's the full gamut in between of what you can do because you can find success many ways in this league.
Yeah, we've always felt like that was a huge piece where we could potentially be helpful is trying to match up sort of some of these strengths with the scheme, the way the offense is being run. I think that, some of these newer coaches, you brought up Mike McDaniel, I think that he has done a phenomenal job of understanding who Tua is and who Tua isn't, and dialing up that offense around what he can do. Jalen Hurts is another one where, that offense is not going to work for Sam Darnold. And so matching up, being able to match up these strengths and weaknesses with a system that's really going to maximize. I mean, all you guys are phenomenal athletes, outstanding. Anybody who is entering the draft clearly is a capable quarterback. It's not, making it in the league. There's a difference between being Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and your average everyday starting quarterback, but those average everyday starting quarterbacks and even the backups are phenomenal quarterbacks. I just think oftentimes they haven't been, adequately, for the lack of a better term, matched up with a system that matches the way that they can play, the way that they process information, the way they process the game.
Yeah, no, what if the NFL draft was actually like a placement? Like, and you like, hey, what doctor should you go into? Where should you go into healthcare? And it's like, actually, you're probably better suited for this style of offense. You're going to go into this. This is who's going to take you. I mean, imagine what that would look like. Okay. Last couple questions here, Drew. Could be random, could be funny, could be neither, could be both. Three random questions I've not prepped you on at all. Who in your mind was the best teammate, however you want to define teammate that you ever played with?
Man, I took a oath to not ever single anybody out and compare anybody to anybody because that just never works out well. But an easy answer that I was, because I don't want to take that route now that I'm done. Larry Fitzgerald, when I first got here, what he has meant to this city, what he has meant to that organization and that franchise, and who he continues to be. From the guy that shows up day one on practice squad to the guy that he was a teammate with for as many years as he played here. He was all about the team. He was all about every single person on the team. And to be a Hall of Famer, arguably the greatest receiver of all time, to be that good of a human being and be that invested in your team is pretty remarkable.
Not a bad choice. I'm sure. I think a lot. I've never heard anyone say a bad thing about Larry. Second question. What is the funniest or most active? So this isn't going to call out one guy, probably a couple. Funniest or most active group text you're a part of?
You know, I'm a pretty boring father of four now. When I was playing, it was a lot more.
Okay.
there was a lot more back and forth. I mean, there's group texts that I'm on with all of the different quarterbacks that I played throughout of, you know, when my time in Detroit with Matthew Stafford and Sean Hill and Todd Downing, our quarterback coach at the time, yeah, and Scott Linehan. And then I'm on another group text with Andrew Luck and Chandler Harnish. And, you know, Andrew finally updated his phone, which was great when he had a kid. He had the flip phone forever.
No,
so
green
he
bubbles?
Oh, yeah. He had the T9. Oh. Yeah. He had the T9 text for the longest time. And then I remember him texting, you know, when he finally got on that that new technology that was been out there for so long. So, you know, there's that. And then there's still guys Michigan State that I played with, the full gamut of guys there that, you know, my disgruntled friends that are sitting there yelling at the TV when Michigan State can't beat Michigan. So there's a whole bunch of them. And then there's also ones too of my time with the Cardinals with Carson Palmer and some of those guys. Again, it's not just usually it's not just players. It's the full realm because
everybody.
You know that, yeah, you know, the people that you're around and the people that you do life with in that phase, you're with them so much. You are with them constantly. Like even the strength coach with the Arizona Cardinals, Buddy Morris, who I absolutely love. I still, you know, we're on a group text and we'll send texts out when we see him on the sideline with his cutoff sleeves on and, you know, all this stuff. So it's the banter doesn't stop. It just gets, you know, watered down a little bit, or you respond when you have time.
last question, Drew, your favorite sport moment you got to be a part of?
I would have to say the largest comeback in college football history, which still stands, against Northwestern. So, you know, I always preface it with you should never be down that much to Northwestern, but we were. And, you know, it was a tumultuous season as far as a lot of different things personally and collectively. But we came back. We were down 35-3 and we ended up winning that game. And to this day, it still stands. But again, just a testament, because I think to me, at the end of the day, though you play the quarterback position, the leadership components that go into that of everybody buying into what you're trying to do when you step in that huddle in that locker room is so important. And we had a blocked punt for that game. We had an interception in the red zone to stop them. And we went down and just did such a good job of just saying, we got to play the next play. Like, my impulse control was very bad coming out the second half because I threw an interception I shouldn't have thrown, because I tried to force a ball. And then I pulled back and said, you know what? We've got to just be patient, start building this thing back the way they did. And then we ended up kicking a game-winning field goal, and it still stands as the record. So it's something that I'm very proud to put my name on and be a part of. And like I said, the quarterback position, you get way too much credit when things go well, and you get all the blame when things don't go your way. But that's who we are and what we expect at this point.
And what you sign up for. Drew Stanton, 14-year NFL vet and Super Bowl champ. Appreciate your time. Been in the ear a little bit about impulse control. Hopefully see you next month.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Thanks for listening to the S2 Cognition Podcast. If you like the content we're putting out, please subscribe with that plus sign at the top of your app, leave a review about the episode, and share it with a few friends. You can follow us on Twitter at S2 Cognition and Instagram at S2.Cognition. If you'd like to get in touch with the program or show, please visit our website at S2Cognition.com/podcast. Thanks again for listening to the S2 Cognition Podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Hunter, signing off for now. We will talk to you soon.